Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights. We'll
be with tonight's guest, producer and playwright Scott Carter.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky. We'll be stars.
And musical guest, Todd O'Dell. I am Mark Leger, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am here. As a matter of fact, I feel like I'm here more than ever, because the conversation that we are going to have today with our guest, Scott Carter, brought me here. Actually, we started the conversation before we went on air. The conversation started when I saw his play. And interestingly enough, I saw his play Discord and at the Geffen Playhouse. And Mark, you've seen it. Actually, Dorothy's seen it. Dorothy's dragged everybody that she knows to this play and told everybody about it. She's seen it actually four times. So I've only gotten
that she's told us.
That she's told us, right. She's probably secretly seen it more. And it's interesting because here I am watching this play wherein, let's see, we had a founding father, Thomas Jefferson, a Victorian novelist, Charles Dickens, and a Russian revolutionary, Leo Tolstoy, all in a room after their death, contemplating their lives. Not that they wanted to, which I don't want to give the play away. So when we have Scott, we'll know. When we're talking with Scott, we'll know what we can or cannot say. So here they are. They're contemplating their lives. They're examining their lives. And we're learning from this play and from the research that Scott has done that the lives that we know of them aren't the real lives that they actually had. And probably not the lives that they publicized about. So now fast forward, that was the night I saw the play. And then a week later, I was having friends with a new friend. I mean, I was having a dinner with a new friend, an acquaintance, who is really big in the entertainment industry. And we were having a conversation, and somebody who's very famous came up, who is a talk show host, and this person says, that person isn't who you think that person is. And I, of course, might know more than he thinks I know. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, that person talks a good talk, but behind the scenes is a very, very difficult person and goes against everything they talk about during the show. Like so-and-so, yet another very famous person. And the same kind of thing. You should have seen how that person treats their people. And I wouldn't even treat my dog like that. And I spent hours with this person. I helped make this person famous. And then another person, I thought, wait a minute. The Leo Tolstoy and Charles Dickens and Thomas Jefferson, though that's an analogy, metaphor for our lives and other things. This could be, this whole play could be written about this famous person on TV right now and this famous person on TV right now and this famous person in the movies, and that it could be that right now.
Or most anyone, probably.
Right. Maybe, right.
At least at various times.
Right. Right. In our own circle of friends, in our families, in our communities. Yeah. Well, there it is. Well, we are talking about something that needs to be examined. And thanks to this play, Discord, by our guest, Scott Carter, we are going to be examining something very, very interesting. Life, in fact. And we ask the question, is an unexamined life worth living? And we will be answering that question and so many more when we come back with our guest, Scott Carter, and a little later on, more of the same kind of conversation, but through music, with our guest, musical guest, Todd O'Dell, who through music, lyrics, and song, invites us to do the exact same thing. We'll be right back right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We are back. And as mentioned, our guest is Scott Carter. If you don't already know him, you actually probably know his work. He has been executive producer and writer for Real Time with Bill Maher. He also has been the same for Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. He has won so many awards. As a matter of fact, he produced the first 1,100 episodes of Politically Incorrect from 1993 to 1997. And while doing so, he won 8 Emmy nominations. That's a big deal in this industry. What a big deal. So, and it's interesting, unfortunately, plays aren't as celebrated. However, his play, Discord, is right up there and should be getting awards. Well, maybe when it goes to Broadway, which I hope it does, or oops, I hope I didn't say something people don't know yet. But that's my wish for our guest, Scott Carter. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Filippo. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to this conversation, and I'm so glad that you saw the play.
As you know, we all saw the play, including some of our friends, and we've been talking about it ever since, because I think that's what your play does, inspire
and,
that.
And that's my goal. Before we had this run at the Geffen, we had a run at the NoHo Arts Center in January and February. And before that, we did a stage reading at Gary Marshall's theater, The Falcon. And after the reading was over, Kathleen Marshall, who's Gary's daughter, who helps run the theater with him, said, whenever we do a play, in the lobby, as soon as the play is over, people are talking about, do you want to get something to eat? Do you want to get a drink? No, I'm tired. I want to go home. She said, in the lobby after your reading, everyone was just talking about the play. And that's my goal with this. The beginning of this for me goes back 27 years. I was a stand-up comedian in New York before I got into television, and I'm a lifelong asthmatic. I had a near-death experience, and it landed me in Bellevue in New York for about a week. And when I came out, I had this kind of epiphany experience where I saw the world as being completely different. It was both familiar and unfamiliar at the same time, and I instantly went from being either hostile or indifferent to religion and God to feeling like, yes, of course there is a God, and I have not, that opinion has not changed in me since that day. And I went into this kind of bliss state, which is not a completely unusual thing. This happens to people, and it's very strong for a few days, and then it fades. Well, when it faded, I told myself that this almost a week of time was one of the most alive, was the most alive time I'd ever had in my life. And so I wanted to get back to that feeling of really loving everybody, feeling like, yes, there's a God, feeling like all the tragedies of my life made complete sense because they got me to this moment. And so I began to open myself up to all sorts of things that I heretofore had been either hostile or indifferent to, and I would just, I used to, if someone told me that they were religious in any way, I would immediately think that they were less intelligent. Mm. And I just began to go to a place where I would, if people talked to me, if they wanted to talk to me, I would have a conversation. If they wanted me to read something, or if they wanted me to go to some ceremony, I would have to go to it. And I would just have to keep my mind open. Well, during this time, after a year or so, I saw this television show that Bill Moyers did where he was talking about the Jefferson Bible, which I'd never heard about. But Jefferson was a very radical thinker in many, many ways. And over a period of 3 nights during his first administration in the White House, he takes two identical copies of the Gospels. He needs two identical copies because he's going to need both pages, both sides of the page. Then he takes a razor and he cuts out from the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he cuts out everything he likes about the Gospels and gets rid of everything he doesn't. And he makes it into this, he pastes all the verses he likes into a blank book, and this becomes kind of a comfort to him. He does this once in 1803, he does an expanded version of this in 1820, and he keeps it in his nightstand. Even his family doesn't know about it. Mm. So I just saw that there was something interesting and captivating to me about this, and then a few years later I found out that Dickens had written a Gospel. And a couple of years after that, I found out that Tolstoy had written the Gospel. So then I began to research what their lives were like. And I, over a period of time, 200 drafts, 50 staged readings, and then this year we've done 101 performances, so it's been seen by almost 10,000 people. And it's now, there's a great deal of interest for next season from several different regional theaters across America, and I think maybe New York, either Broadway or off-Broadway, or London, would be maybe a year and a half from now.
Nice. Very nice. I think with something like that, obviously the play is gaining momentum, and this conversation is gaining momentum all over. I think the people are talking about it not just because the play is brilliantly written, by the way, but also because it's a conversation that people are needing to have, and the play speaks to them in a way that they can have it.
The other night we had Theodore Bekel, who was the original Captain Von Trapp in the first Broadway production of Sound of Music opposite Mary Martin, and he was in the movie My Fair Lady, and he played Tevye for many years in Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway. And he came to the play, and he's a very distinguished gentleman. And I'd never met him before, but he knows Armin Shimerman, who plays Tolstoy. And he said, I think that when people leave the theater after this play, everyone should be given a copy of the script. Mm. They should then read it, and then they should be required to come back a week later and see the play again.
Mm.
And I said, well, you know, I don't have the subpoena power by which to enforce that edict. But I approve of your sentiment. And a lot of people came back two and three times to see this from the NoHo run and from the Geffen run. And I feel like it's a play that really sticks with people. The original person who played Dickens, David Melville, who's the artistic director of the Independent Shakespeare Company, he had, on our first run in NoHo, he had a friend of his call him up the day after he saw it, and the friend called him up and said, I hate this play. And that's the only kind of negative thing like that we've ever heard. And then 2 weeks later, the same friend called him back and said, forget what I said, and by the way, I'm reading the Bible now. So in other words, this is someone who, when they were watching the play, they were afflicted in some way. They were disturbed in some way, and first it manifested itself as anger. But later it manifested itself as investigation.
Mm. That was something I was watching, Scott. I was watching, not only enjoying the play, but I would glance over and kind of watch the audience a little bit. That's I like the people watching. And when it got into certain subjects that I felt, you know, kind of pushed on belief systems, which, of course, from the various perspectives, it does. I could see it challenging some of the audience. And, you know, there's this thing called cognitive dissonance, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. And I thought I saw and felt that a little bit in the audience. But why I wanted to mention this is I applaud you for how you deliver it, both in text and how it came off in the acting. You really are able to deliver it. At the end of the play for us, the question and answer part, I was impressed to see enthusiastic questions from a probably 40 or 50 year age range of people in the audience. From young and old were really chomping at the bit to ask questions, and that says a lot to how you delivered the information.
Well, thank you very much, and we have been so I have been so lucky with the whole team of this production, the director, Matt August, the three actors, the design team did an incredible job. And we had this wonderful production at NoHo that where we got 18 out of 19 rave reviews. We ran for 7 weeks, and we had to close. And then, coincidentally, the Geffen then had a hole in their schedule. They'd had a production fall out. So then a few weeks after the play closed at NoHo at the end of February, they called me, and I had a talk with them. I think it was either late March or early April. And they said, we'd like you to take over this October slot. And by the way, if you want to keep all the actors, keep all the actors. If you want to keep the director, keep the director. We don't want to screw it up now. We all think it's really good. And the literary manager, Amy Levinson, had seen it. The casting director had seen it. The artistic director had read it. And they said, we want to bring it forward and let it get deeper and let it get better. And so we had this luxury of time between the end of February and the rehearsals, which began around Labor Day, for all the actors and the director to do a lot more research and go deeper into who their characters are. And then, of course, at the Geffen, we had a little larger of a budget. We had a little bit more time. And so I feel like I'm the luckiest playwright in America right now. It'll be published next year, and then we'll be probably in the next eight or nine weeks figuring out which regional theaters it's going to be performing in next season.
Well, then, since it's going to be published next year, then you can have the books there and make it mandatory for everybody to leave with.
Yeah, that's right. So Theodore Bacall will get his wish.
In a way, I had the Emperor Has No Clothes moment for each of these playwrights, and I thought, if I had seen, or not each of the playwrights, I'm sorry, each of the characters and real characters in our lives, were real people and really prominent people and affected our culture and civilization at large. And I had a moment of, well, if we had known this at the time, whoever lived during those times, how would that have changed the course of history? Where would we be now? And when we come back, Scott, I just want to take a moment and get your thought on that, because you've delved so deep into this. Certainly, you must have given this a thought. So when we come back with our guest, Scott Carter, right after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website
at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back. Our guest is Scott Carter. He is the executive producer and writer for Real Time with Bill Maher and the playwright for the play Discord, which just temporarily closed. I think it was yesterday or
but last night, and obviously
reopen real soon someplace in a theater near you. A little later on, we're going to have Todd O'Dell, who is the lead singer and guitarist for Crown Vega, live here in the studio, sharing his version of Is an Unexamined Life Worth Living Through Song. Scott, you have so delved into so much in order to create this play. Obviously, your life, because it's obvious to me that if you didn't know who you are and where you stand, you couldn't write about where other people, who other people are and where they stand. That's just my take on it. But I have a phrase that I coined a couple years ago, which is never judge a book by its author. And I stand by that, and I've come to that after interviewing so many authors who actually had no idea what they were writing about. I would ask them questions about their book, concepts that were brilliant that they wrote, and they didn't understand their own writing. So I don't know if it's channeling, or I don't know if somebody else actually wrote it. I don't know what it is, but the message was good. So not about you, but about Leo Tolstoy and Thomas Jefferson and Charles Dickinson. If we had known their real stories at the time, how would that have changed our appreciation for their work or our civilization as we have been following them, especially Thomas Jefferson?
Well, I think that with Jefferson, his in the presidential when he ran for president in 1800 against John Adams, who was the incumbent, and he defeated him, that's when the rumors and allegations about his siring children with Sally Hemings, his slave, first arose. And he was able to squeak out a victory there. And then he was able, because it was a much different time media-wise, he was able to avoid mention of it in the future. He was overwhelmingly reelected. And then that was the last time he ran for any kind of office in 1804. And then he retired back to Monticello. So he thought, I think, that by the time he died, he thought that he was taking secrets to his grave. I think that Dickens and I think Tolstoy also did. Mm-hmm. But in the last few weeks, as well as more allegations have come out about Bill Cosby, one thing I've thought of is just the advancement of technology with the increased human lifespan, longevity increasing. I think fewer and fewer people are going to be going to their graves with the mm-hmm. sense that they are taking their secrets with them. And I think, as far as human history goes, I think that Dickens always had a fear that the public was going to find out what a dark person he actually was. And I think that he had a fear that he was going to, at some point, wind up being poor again, and re-experience the poverty that he had as a child, where his family was thrown into a debtor's prison. Mm. And I think he thought that even though he had been very popular with not only the American, with the English public, but just all around the world, I think he thought they could turn on me at any moment. And I think he had a fear, which is why always he was very industrious, and he was always doing a million things at once, and he was just this font of energy. There's a line in the play, which is true, that he said that, you know, for every hour he wrote, he would have to walk an hour. And he had a house about 30 miles away from London, and he would often walk from London to the house in Kent. And when he was in America, he toured America twice, and the first time he organized marathon walks in Boston and New York and other cities while he was here, and he was a big proponent of physical exercise. Tolstoy was a terrible bully to his wife and family, and then later in the last few years, her diaries have come out where she's talking about, you know, describing what he was like, and it's very different than the sort of image he presented at the time, which was almost that of a saint. I think that what the play does for me in many ways, I wouldn't compare myself to Samuel Beckett, but in Waiting for Godot, you have the curtain rises and we see two bums, and when the play begins, we think we are better than the bums. And over the course of 2 hours, we very much have this sense that we are like these two people.
Mm-hmm.
We're all going to get sick. We're all going to get old. We're all going to die. And then also the theme that runs through the play is they're waiting for this Mr. Godot to come, this magical Mr. Godot who is going to change their lives for the better and solve all their problems. And that's what a lot of us do. We look forward to some future event that when it occurs, all will be great in life. And we often miss out living our lives because of that. So I feel like my play is the opposite premise, where when the play starts and these three men walk through that door and are then trapped in this room, they are three of the most famous, most accomplished people who have ever lived. And I think there's a sense of intimidation about them with their great accomplishments and wealth and the power that they had at the time. And then I think over the course of the play, my goal is that we see them having the same human frailties that we recognize in ourselves. If I can get an audience to see that by the end of the play, I will feel like mission has been accomplished.
Well, mission accomplished. Brilliant. I'm wondering in the case of these three characters. Okay, so they've been gone a while, and now the veil has been lifted, and now through your play, we get to know the truth about them. In the case of, like I started in the monologue at the very beginning, a lot of our very famous celebrities who we know, some of us know, are not, they don't practice what they preach, whether they're preachers or not. But I'm wondering, is it, are we supposed to know? Because, you know, a lot of comedians, and you were one, and I don't know if you were this kind of comedian, but The majority of comedians I know are really depressed people who spend their days being miserable, and then they write jokes, and then they go on stage and are absolutely brilliant and extremely funny. And they make the rest of us laugh and think and hopefully grow from the humor. Do we really need to know that they spent the rest of their day being very depressed, very down, negative people?
I don't know that we need to know. But I think with the advancement of technology, I think that it's inescapable that we do know. You know, we're able to follow people when they go out in public to have lunch, or when they're walking from the restaurant to their car, or they're in the grocery store. They're going to be photographed. They're going to be videotaped. It's going to get out on social media. And so I think that's something that now, if you are a celebrity, that's something you have to accept as being part of the social contract. Of having wealth and fame is going to be this loss of privacy, this invasion. And then I just think that, I think that good works can still occur by people who we may not admire as people. And I think your line about don't judge a book by its author is a brilliant one, because even if my opinion by finding out more about Tolstoy's life, even my opinion goes down, I just reread War and Peace a couple of years ago. I read it for the first time in 1977 when I was traveling on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. It was the perfect place to read War and Peace. But I reread it a couple of years ago. It is by far the greatest novel that I have ever read. And even if Tolstoy was a terrible person, it doesn't mean that War and Peace is not a great book. It is a great book. And I think when I was younger, I don't know about you, but when I was younger, I used to think if there was a work that I admired or some performer, some movie star that I admired, I used to think they have to be good people also.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when I was a little bit older and had a sense of disillusionment about that, and I've worked in talk variety TV now since 1988. So I've met a lot of people who, many of them, live up to be exactly who you want them to be, and others are completely disillusioning. And there was a time where I thought I would discount their work if I didn't like them as people.
Mm.
And now I feel like I've gotten to perhaps a more sophisticated middle ground, which is the person and the work are completely different things.
Mm.
You know, and all the work is, the work only shows how you were during a certain period of life. Let's say if Tolstoy's writing War and Peace over a period of 3 years, it's a product of that three-year period of time. But we don't know what he's going to be like after that. He could become a mass murderer. He could become and people are now living longer and longer. Both Jefferson and Tolstoy lived to be 83, but people are living longer and longer. By which I think they become different people at different times. And I feel like life is just accelerating around me. I feel like the news, like this is generally a slow news time. But we stopped taping real time on November 21st, and after that, the Ferguson grand jury decision came, and we've had Eric Garner, and we've had changing our relationship to Cuba. I mean, there's just been so many things that the torture report, it seems like Sony, the hacking story, this has been an incredible, very news-filled holiday season, and this is very unusual, but I think it's just the world is speeding up.
There's so much happening. You're absolutely right.
I was going to say, referencing, you know, biblical works, Revelations comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we don't know. And that's another thing is with a lot of historical characters. And, we don't know very much about Shakespeare. We don't know. I mean, we don't know what Jesus was like. We don't. I mean, what if the Twitterverse and people with smartphone cameras were following Jesus 24 hours a day, or Buddha, or Moses. Who knows? Who knows what how our opinion of them might change if the current technology had been available when Shakespeare was around, or Lincoln.
And it's not just happening to the famous, like Mark pointed out at the beginning. It's happening to every single person, especially the kids. And so it's going to be a completely different world, as wherever they are, whether they're partying or what have you, there's a video of it, there's a picture of it, and it's not just what happened at that party stays at that party anymore. It's everywhere, and that's going to affect everything. And what an interesting question that leads. But we've got a couple more interesting questions when we come back with one more segment with our guest, Mark Scott Carter. After this, Mark has a question for him, and then I've got some questions for our guest, musical guest, Todd O'Dell, all along the same lines. Very interesting. This is a perfect time to be talking about this. This, as Scott said, this is a season of these kinds of things coming up. So we'll be right back with our guest, Scott Carter, right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at LifeChangesWithFilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We are back. Our guest is Scott Carter.
Scott, our executive producer, had a question. I thought it was relevant even more given what you were just saying about the personality types and that. If you were to be locked in a room with one of those three and had to, explore that conversation, which one would you want it to be?
I people often ask me, who do you like the best of the three? And my answer always is, I love all my children. I will go through periods of time where I'll be rediscovering parts of one or the other, and I'll also have times where I'll feel like I've neglected so-and-so. Like I've been, like 2 years ago, I was doing a lot of Jefferson, then I did a lot of Dickens, then I realized, oh, I've been neglecting Tolstoy. Let me go back and work on him a little bit more, and let me read a little bit more about him. But I was also interested by what you were saying a minute ago about kids. I have a 19-year-old and a 14-year-old. I think that they are a completely different species than I am. Mm. I think that the way that their brains are wired and the way that they live their lives is completely different than the world in which I grew up. Mm. And I was also interested by the commercial, two commercials ago, about Shadow Stevens' book, because
right.
Bullying is such a huge... bullies have so many more forums now than they used to. Bullies have more platforms now to torment people in schools, you know, through social media, and that's a very dangerous thing. That there was nothing like that when I was growing up.
Absolutely, and it's so widespread. We've been talking about doing a show just on that, actually. It can affect something on Facebook or on Twitter or any of these social medias, Instagram, whatever, can reach the whole school as opposed to and beyond, as opposed to just the kid knowing about it or their intimate close friends. So absolutely. At the same time, though, interestingly enough, based on what you were saying earlier, made me think of, yeah, Mark just did it with his hands. Like the flip side, absolutely, is that the bully can be shown for what they are as well.
I think they could get away with behind the schoolyard a lot more than they can now, and that's why it's in this level of dialogue. I think we've raised awareness.
Well, I think the citizenry is learning how to react to different problems that have cropped up with the rise of technology, and I think then people are learning how to adapt and not be tormented and bullied by these people.
You know, for some reason, and this could be one of the many reasons, but I'm not one to get addicted to TV, but I've been addicted to a show called Keeping Up Appearances. You probably remember it from an old British show from a couple decades ago. And just the phrase alone, the keeping up appearances, here is the leading character, a woman who comes from a lower class, whether we like it or not, in England, that's how they defined it up until now. And she came from a lower class, and her husband got a decent job, and now she's pretending to be something that she's not. And she's trying to hide what she really is, but everybody knows. And it's this ridiculous act that she plays. And I watch this, but I see, like your play, I see this in our everyday lives with the cars some of us drive, the houses some of us own, and the clothes some of us wear to keep up appearances, which are, with what we're talking about, starting to crumble down around us.
Yeah, I just think there are more ways for people to get found out now. And I think that the notion of people putting on a false appearance, I think it's going to get harder and harder as time goes on.
And maybe there's something potentially, quote-unquote, spiritual about that. Maybe that's where we get to the real us.
I think that's very, very possible.
I am very, very excited about that, and I'm going to hold that as the possibility and keep talking about it like that. Now, let me ask you before we move on here, I know you have to go as well. I wanted to know what are just a handful of the things that you hope people are talking about when it comes to the play, because, you know, you obviously, in your brilliance, you put out all kinds of information through the shows that you do. And I'm sure a lot of this that is on TV is Bill Maher, and a lot of it is you and maybe other people and things that are important in the day and all of that. So your information gets out there big time. And now here is this play. What information out of this play do you want people to have really gotten or really thought about?
Well, I would say it's something. It's one thing that I feel like is very simple, which is when I got out of the hospital, I realized I could no longer postpone thinking about the big questions. In other words, why are we here? Is there going to be any kind of a judgment? If there is a judgment, do you think there's a God? If you think there's a God, what kind of criteria will he use to judge you? If there's a criteria, then how should you be living your life? Shouldn't it be in accordance with that criteria? So if I can have people come out of the play and think that and have a sense of, and for me the key word is urgency, about dealing with the big questions of life, then I think that's the job that I want to have done.
Well, it's obvious to me that you have, and I should probably tell you that in the studio at the moment, Dorothy is wearing three buttons. One says, I'm with Tolstoy. Another one says, I'm with Dickens. Another one says, I'm with Jefferson. You might want to share with our audience what that's about.
We had three boxes in the lobby before you entered the theater, and one had a Jefferson button, one had a Dickens button, one had a bunch of Tolstoy buttons, and we would ask people to take one for who you think you might most agree with in the play. And then if during the course of the play you changed your allegiance, you could swap it out later. And we tracked it every night. And the winner overall, I think we gave 5,000 buttons out. And the winner overall was Jefferson, and Tolstoy was number two, and Dickens was number three. Mm. But over a period of time, we saw that a lot of people would take Jefferson and then often, or Dickens, and switch to Tolstoy. That's one of the trends we saw. But it was a way of getting people to be a little bit invested with the play before the play started.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when whatever button you pick, when that character comes on, you're looking at that person with extra focus because you've already said you're sort of identifying with that person. And then if you find how they later turn out to be something that's unpalatable to you, then you have to reconsider, well, among the other two, who would I pick? Who would I most identify with? So almost everybody who came to the play loved this idea, and they would always laugh when they would find out about it, and they loved to, you know, they'd sit and they would talk about which they were going to pick, and very often a couple would, you know, the husband would think the wife would pick the same thing he's going to, but no, she wanted to get a different button. And I would always say there's no right or wrong here. They're all three good choices. And anyway, so I'm glad that, and Dorothy has very much the right to have three buttons because she came three times.
Four,
well, she
actually.
Came four times. She came four times. She should have four buttons. We'll have to make a new character and a new button for her.
Well, I actually understand that there are some people that wanted you to have at least one more character in there. Was it Newton, I think? And
you know, yes. Yeah, well, at different times I was considering other people. And Shirley MacLaine came to a reading that I had many years ago, and then she took me to lunch. And she lobbied for including Sir Isaac Newton. And I was very flattered that she would care that much to suggest it. But I just said, I've got to stop because I've been working on this for a quarter of a century, and I want to have it be done.
Mm. Well, have you ventured to think that if you were, you might not want to say, but if this were today, using characters in our world today, would there be three that come to mind as I'd like to see those three in a room?
Well, I mean, people often ask me, how can you pick these three people? And the answer is they picked me because they all did the same astounding task, which is they all personally made their own version of the gospel.
Right.
And so I would have to find three people today who did that, and I do not know of those people.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Well, you before we close here, you mentioned Shirley MacLaine, and it is Christmas for those who believe in Christmas or celebrate Christmas. I just want to kind of throw a punchline in, just kind of to wrap this up for some reason. I think Shirley MacLaine said something else to you, and it has something to do with the Christmas star.
She said that the Star of Bethlehem hovered in the sky because it was actually a spaceship.
And
I had such a delightful time talking to her because she very quickly in the conversation established that she'd gotten to a stage in life. She said something like, I've sold 32 million books. I don't care what people think. And in other words, I'm going to say what I believe to be true. You may not believe it, but I'm going to put it out there anyway because I know it's what I believe. And you cannot help but respect that.
Well, and there it is. Well, I cannot help but respect you. I respected you without even knowing you, but after having seen your play, I felt like I know you because somebody that can write that brilliantly, that can make me laugh and cry and be contemplative for all this time afterwards, my hat is off to you.
Well, thank you, Filippo, and thank you, Mark, and thank you, Dorothy. And this has been a pleasure.
This has been our pleasure indeed. Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing the play again in its next incarnation.
I will invite you. I
Do
will
let
invite
us know.
You all. Thank you very much. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
That was extra special. I just had to throw that question in at the end.
Well done. More to contemplate over.
Well played. All right. Well, we come back. Speaking of well played, we're going to get to hear our guest, Todd O'Dell, play some songs that'll get us to contemplate even more right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
We are back, and as if we haven't explored enough questions, we have our guest, who is the lead singer of Crown Vega, actually, and
I was, but...
Oh, you were?
Yeah, that's kind of over, but I was, but yeah.
Okay. Well, he's moving on,
he's
just Todd O'Dell, and the lead singer of Todd O'Dell, and the lead guitarist, and lyricist, and songwriter. You know, actually, when we first met and started talking, I was really taken by your understanding of so much of actually the concepts that we talked about today on the air. And I asked you recently, actually, where this comes from. Like, was it from early childhood that you were thinking like this?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I was, I think I've always thought since I was little that something wasn't quite right the way things worked around me and how I saw it. And it kind of frustrated me, I think. But I didn't really know at those times. You know, when you're so young, you don't really, your world is so little, but you are feeling like your heart is feeling like something is not vibrating right with me right now. And watching my parents go through this turmoil and the things that go on, you're like, is this how it should be? So it was very kind of confusing as a small kid.
Kind of like Scott said about his children, that they're wired differently. So
yeah, absolutely.
So this wiring in your case brought you to music, and you have your first song that you're going to do for us. What's that called?
This is called Waves on High. And actually, it kind of talks about speaking your truth, you know, what you feel through your heart and letting it out there without worrying about what other people are going to think or look at you.
Not Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah, exactly. It was exactly the same thing. Yeah,
perfect.
Exactly.
Segue.
Yeah.
Here's Todd O'Dell and...
Let us wake transformation take with wild eyes and fearless days. Stand up and sing your love, those things that you wanted to say. We're flying high now. Don't bring us down. The things that we think of affect the makeup of one love creation. Well, let our souls rise. Things that we think of affect the makeup of one love creation. Well, let our souls rise. We're supercharged. Electricity. It's a long, long drive. Just giving the best of me. Stand up and sing. Yeah, I love those things that you want. Now, don't bring us down. The things that we think of affect the makeup of one love creation. We'll let our souls rise. Things that we think of affect the makeup of one love creation. We'll let our souls rise.
If you want to learn more about Todd Odell, go to lifechangesnetwork.com or lifechangesshow.com and go to this show, our 299th show with Todd Odell, and you'll find his links there, both for Facebook and YouTube. And if we get any more on him, we'll post it up there too so that you can follow him and hear more of his music like we're about to right now. But before we do, I think it might help to share with people that it's not just because we grew up, some of us, in L.A. or in New York. People think that because we grow up on the coasts that we're more free-thinking and all that, because more of this is available to us. You didn't grow up here, right?
No, I did not.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin?
A little town called Sparta, 6,000 when I was there. It's about 8,000 now, I think.
See? So, yeah. You might not know this, but there are people right now in all parts of the country, not just in California or New York, that are thinking like us.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And since you probably didn't talk to people about this then, you didn't know that maybe they existed around you at the time. So, stand up and, what did you say in the lyrics?
Stand up and sing.
And sing.
What you want to say.
Speak up.
Let it go.
Yeah, say it. Because somebody in your neighborhood might be feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And then, if they don't agree with you.
That's fine.
Sing louder.
Sing louder.
Yeah.
All right, what are we going to hear now?
This is called Moonshine.
Is it about the alcoholic drink?
And it's not the drinking moonshine. It's about the moon, the shine of the moon itself. It's a very, very odd ball of whatever it is out there. I don't think it's been there forever. And look what it does to us. Look what it does to the earth, how it pulls on us and how it pushes the earth off the axis a little bit. And How it pulls on us in full moon, how it makes people, it has a lot of
effect
on us.
It makes people drunk like,
yeah,
like
makes you,
moonshine.
It makes
so,
you wonder.
Perfect. Yeah. Oh, okay, well, here's Todd O'Dell and Moonshine.
I'm losing my mind. Wake up dead inside the place of the day. Always never satisfied. We need to open our eyes to the things that are not right. They bleed on the sky. TV as a guide. Your way down high. Some will say we're walking blind. Zoe way down high. Some will say we're walking blind. Lie the waves that in vain are not part of nature's wave. Disease of the hive, delinquent healing time. The thoughts of our minds, when changed, life can be divine. Your way down. Say we're walking blind. Your way down high. Some will say we're walking blind. Some say we're walking blind. Some will say we're walking blind.
If I'm not mistaken, these are not recorded yet, right?
They are not.
Then they have just been recorded, actually. You've heard it here
awesome.
First on Life Changes. And you can hear it again by listening to the show again. And someday, maybe Todd will release these. In the meantime, thanks to Brent Hahn here in Studio NoHo, we got to enjoy this live. And this reminds me, next week is our 300th show, our 300th anniversary, and we are doing a very special show with a very special man. Stay tuned to find out who that is. It'll be our 300th anniversary of the Life Changes show. So tune in next week. In the meantime, I am Filippo Voltaggio, thanking Brent Hahn and Doug Newson, Dorothy Donahue, Mark, and I thank all of you for being part of our 299 shows so far. I'm reminding you also that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, Life Changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.